Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player.
This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking about Pete's Dragon.
To the forest we go to find green furry dragons.
Sounds delicious.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording. This is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello. Hi, how are you?
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back to other fun movie topics. This is episode 251, 251.
I mean, every episode is a celebration, Aaron, so we should be excited for every episode, right?
I'm always excited for our episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
Except that one time.
Episode number 4, where we're talking about Scream 4?
Yes, that one.
All right, well, we got to get over that one.
Yeah. Anyway, the main feature for this week, 256 episodes later from that, we have Pete's Dragon, the modern update of 1977's Pete's Dragon. Everyone's always been asking, man, I wish they could remake Pete's Dragon, and now that's finally happened. Just last week, you were like, aren't they going to remake Pete's? And they were like, yeah, it's coming out this week. That's what we're going to do the show on.
And I was super excited. I was like, yeah, super stoked, midnight showing. Boom.
Yeah, you're wearing your Mickey Rooney costume.
I was.
Yeah. Anyway, joining
More
us.
Like, who's Mickey Rooney?
You know, he's that old man of those Night at the Museum movies, you young people that listen to our podcast. anyway, joining us for Pete's Dragon, we have from firstshowing.net, he's been lost and now found in the woods of Germany. It's the return of Alex Billington.
Hey, what's up? What's up? You guys, my friends?
Gut. Sehr gut.
Good? I don't even know what you asked. I took Spanish.
I was just saying, how are you doing?
How are we doing?
Oh, yeah. Fine. Good. German. In German, good. Yes.
Yeah. Alex, welcome back to the podcast. It's been a minute.
Thanks, guys. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. I was emailing you. I was like, we got to get Alex Billington back at the podcast. You're in Germany now. That seems like a fun way to Skype do a podcast over in some way. And sure enough,
yes.
Pete's Dragon seemed to be the common denominator for the movie we could talk about.
Well, that's because, as I was telling you, the problem is that all the movies come out late here, so I don't see them for like a week or two or sometimes 3 weeks after. It kind of sucks, but I just have to deal with it.
Except Disney. Disney's on board. Disney's on the ball.
Disney's on track all the time.
Well, yeah, it's also weird because, for example, Finding Dory, it already opened in the U.S. in June, right? But it doesn't open in Germany until September. But they screened it for press in June. So I could see a press screening in June to, like, see it with the U.S. opening. But it doesn't actually open here for 2 more months, so it's weird.
But Pete's Dragon, though, they're like, is that out already? Is that out?
No, but the same thing happened.
So it's screened.
Yeah, it's screened really early. Yeah.
I was gonna say it's like they let Dory out, or they delayed Dory, but Dragons, like Germany's all about dragons. They gotta get the dragon.
Well, supposedly there's like a long history of them loving the Pete's Dragon story here. I'm like, I don't know anything about that, but if you say so.
Okay. Well, regardless, that's the movie we're gonna be talking about today. Yeah. And happy to have you here. Cool. Let's see. Let's get some show notes out of the way. Last week, Abe and I, we did our 250th podcast episode, our official 250th podcast episode.
Right. Numbered. Yeah.
Those that use our show on iTunes are very well aware that we have way more than 250 episodes. But as far as the episode, as far as the canon episodes of this podcast, we have 250 of them.
They know.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, that's a lot of fun. We talked about why Suicide Squad is a terrible movie, and we also talked about fun things, including our favorite summer movie memories with Scott Watson, friend of the show. So, yeah,
that was a nice discussion.
Yeah, good one to check out if you haven't checked that out already. Speaking of checking out things on iTunes reviews and ratings is good to get those. It helps out our show, helps other people find our show. If you want to log on to iTunes, send in a rating, and possibly write up a little review or whatever you want to write up, that'd be great.
Yeah, thank you very much in advance.
Boost us up in the old podcast charts. I'm sure in Germany, we're probably like pretty high. Like, if you search Out Now, Aaron Abe there, it's like, oh my God. Like, why did
well,
you even type Out?
We're going to get
like,
the Alex right Billington Germany bump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex, we're just assuming that because you're on the show now, like our German listenership is going to increase exponentially.
Well, I hope so. All 5 German moviegoers out there will suddenly keep listening.
And
packed house every night.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And let's see, a commentary track. Every month we do a commentary track for this show, and this month we'll have one coming soon enough. We'll probably record one sometime this week. So yeah, be ready for that. Should be fun, whatever we end up doing. And yeah, that's going to be it for show notes. Let's move on now. Let's get to know everybody. We each week we ask each other a question or two, set the tone for the podcast. We better get to know everybody. Nice.
That was good.
Good effort.
A lot of enthusiasm.
Yes.
A+.
A+.
That's a Peter Parrish thing. It's probably an A+.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What movie character would be better if they were covered in fur?
Any movie character ever?
Any movie character.
Ooh.
It's like, I like those Ocean's movies, but if Brad Pitt was covered in fur, maybe, I don't know, he's like, we'd be better.
I feel like Jason Voorhees.
Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, so that way he can
he'd hide,
you know,
the bushes
unassumingly
better?
Look like a bear when he's coming up to kill you in the forest. Like, I know that he kind of really just kills promiscuous teens, but you know, this kind of just adds to the charm factor.
So,
now.
So in this scenario, Jason Voorhees, who's already very good at sneaking up on people and stalking them, and making people scared, is now covered in fur, so he looks like a bear. So when he approaches you, you're like, oh no, it's a bear with a machete in his hand. At least it's not a human. Like, I feel better about this scenario.
Yeah, now the park rangers are looking for a bear rather than a deceased man from a lake. So it makes sense to me. I don't know.
Thoughts on this, Alex? You got a better one?
Not better, but along the same line, I would say Bumblebee from Transformers, because then he would be really cuddly.
Okay,
that's actually an excellent answer.
In both Autobot and vehicle form.
Well, sure. I mean, either way, just think about it. Just, he would be awesome. Like, you could like hug his leg while he's shooting people, and then you could get in him when he's in vehicle form, and he would just be like the most comfortable car you've ever sat in.
And then Optimus rolls up, and he's all like, "Sam, which wiki would like to pet you?"
Exactly. There would be a couple of cleaning scenes where he gets washed. You know, it's you gotta keep your hair in check there.
Bumblebee, cuddle out.
There you go.
Abe, you got a question?
I do have a question for you guys. Do you guys believe in dragons?
Do I believe in dragons?
Yeah.
I live with dragons. What are you talking about?
Oh, you live with dragons? Oh, wow. You should write a book.
Have you seen Sea Dragons?
I haven't seen Sea Dragons. Is it good?
That's not a movie. I mean, the actual species of animal that is
sea dragons. I was thinking of the water horse.
Abe?
Right? That's a movie, right?
Yes, the water, but that's the Loch Ness monster. That's not a. I guess that is a dragon or something. It's a sea monster. It's a sea monster. It's different.
I have heard of sea monkeys. Yes,
sea monster and dragon. How different is? Because now we got to think. Like, you have like Sasquatch and the Abominable Snowman, which seem to be related in some ways. The sea
how
dragon.
How are those related? Oh, yeah. Okay, right.
Yeah, because one's, you know, one just basically just lives in the Himalayas.
Both are hairy. That goes back to your question.
Both are hairy, and they're both, you know. This is a great conversation we're having.
Yeah.
Alex, do you believe in dragons?
Yes.
Yeah,
because ever since, one of my favorite movies as a kid was Dragonheart, dare I admit, and ever since seeing that, that's like the movie that's like, do you believe in dragons?
Dragonheart, like, starring Dennis Quaid.
Yes, you look up into the sky and you see the Draco. You're just like, oh yes, I do believe in dragons.
Sean Connery is like, I am the last one.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Now we haven't seen him in a couple thousand years, but yeah, I believe it.
Well, that's why. Because he had to stop evil David Thewlis from Dragonheart, so he had to. Maybe that's your commentary
really
explanation for Dragonheart.
Hey man, I like the music. I like the score in Dragonheart.
It's a good score.
Yeah,
and that used to
that
be
one of those things
like that. That used to be one of like Universal's like go to like when they did like a montage of their movies. It was like it was Dennis Quaid like on the sunset or sunrise with the dragon rising behind him. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Like on the like on their DVDs, it used to be like it showed like a bunch of clips of Universal movies, and that was like a key one in all of them.
I mean, back in the day when it was released, that dragon CG looked really good.
Yeah, it was. You can actually even watch it now, and it's like not that bad.
Yeah, I recall it. I've saw it on like TV like in a bit for like a bit. I was like, oh, it's not terrible.
Yeah,
good job.
Let's move back though. Let's play an episode of Cast This real quick, Abe, and talk about Sea Dragons the movie.
What? That is an old classic game that I love. It was one of our original games.
So would in this scenario, would Sea Dragons be an animated feature?
I would want to make it live action.
Okay, live action. Okay. It's imaginary movie. You don't have to like settle like, oh fine, it'll be animation. Let's make a live action.
You want to make a live action. What's the premise?
What's the premise of Sea Dragons?
Yeah.
Well,
there are some sea dragons.
There are some sea dragons. They get unearthed after living in hiding for thousands of years. After it's a spinoff of Dragonheart, obviously. He thought he was the last one, but he was wrong. There were sea dragons, and some scuba diver explores the great depths of like the Lost City of Atlantis type situation. He explores some depths and's like, oh my god, there's sea dragons. That's crazy. Who plays this person? First name that comes to mind. Who?
Sam Neill.
Sam Neill.
Yep. So he's reprising his what was the space movie that he was in where he kills everybody?
Event Horizon.
Yeah, he's reprising an Event Horizon type role where he's the captain of a ship.
Who's like his young understudy? Alex, name it. Young actor, go. So Sam Neill.
Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt. I like.
Hey, that's a great movie. I'd go see that.
Yeah, Anna, we're actually doing something good here.
My lovely girlfriend Anna is suggesting Oscar Isaac should be in this movie. He'll be the evil like oil driller guy that comes in and tries to ruin the sea dragon's environment.
He's the Giovanni Ribisi.
Well, yes, but he's in the Giovanni Ribisi role. But yeah, it's Oscar Isaac. Are these sea dragons? Are they talking, or are they just like random sea dragons?
I'm gonna leave that one to Alex.
They have to talk.
Of course.
Okay, who's voicing these sea
dragons? 2016. I mean, I could go down the funny route and say Jim Carrey or.
Is that still the funny route, by the way?
Okay, good question. Fair enough, but I mean,
Anna's adding in Liam Neeson and Brad Pitt should be. There should be three sea dragons. I feel.
Yeah,
but bring in that Amy Adams. She's in everything.
Amy Adams.
You got a trifecta. Amy Adams, Liam Neeson, and Brad Pitt. Known for their voices, especially Brad Pitt. Everyone's always like, why is Brad Pitt not doing more voices?
Like one, so crazy. Yeah, I think he's done like one animated voice for the movie of Stephen Colbert.
Okay, I think we got this pretty set. Who's writing and directing? That's all we need, and then we got the movie.
Writer is, what's his face? Damn it. Great writer.
From what?
Attack the Block. Joe Cornish.
I like this. Joe Cornish. Yeah.
Joe Cornish wrote this. And who directed it, Alex?
Edgar Wright directs. There you go.
There you go. Fantastic movie.
We got this. Sea Dragons. 2018.
There's A-list actors.
It's a Rush production.
Yeah, there's A-list actors voicing and you know, Sam Neill and Chris Pratt live action.
Yeah.
And boom.
Got a movie.
Yeah, this is great.
Why are we high-fiving off mic? High-five into the mic. Here we go. Okay. And that's how you play. No, everybody.
This. Oh.
And cast this, yes.
Yeah. All right.
Good round, guys.
That was good.
Good guy.
I enjoyed that a lot.
See, without Alex, we wouldn't have had to cast this session. That wouldn't have happened.
No.
Germany saves the day again. That's what history says, right? All right, let's
parallel universe. Yeah,
let's move in the Man of the High Castle, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Let's
on
move
Amazon
on.
Prime's Man of the High Castle.
Yeah, let's move on now to Out Now Quickies.
Yep.
Each week in Out Now, we have one movie of the week that we talk about. We saw the movies during the week that we're going to Out Now Quickies.
Yep.
It's good. I like that.
It's good.
I ramped it up over time.
And you've been enunciating a little bit more. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing job exercises. Yeah, I've been singing as much as the character in the movie I'm going to mention.
Vocal cords.
I've been singing as much as the character I'm going to mention for my quickie. But Abe, what movie have you seen recently?
I saw Begin Again.
You saw
the first time.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Which means you still haven't seen Sing Street.
I haven't seen Sing Street, but
so you watched the former movie.
Yeah. So now I've seen Once, and I've seen Begin Again. Now I'm going to go see Sing Street sometime later, probably in the next 4 years. So, you know, it works out. Yeah.
Alex, have you seen Sing Street by chance?
I have. I love Sing Street.
Yeah, see, Alex, he's not even in this country anymore. He's seen the movies.
I'll definitely have to give it a go.
I literally just watched it last night.
Sing Street again?
Yes.
I mean,
that's the name of the second volume of the album, by the way. That's what it should when it comes out. Sing Street again.
That's the second volume.
Two. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I also finished Stranger Things on Netflix, and it's good. Like, it's pretty good. I don't know about it. I'd say, like, I wouldn't rave about it, because I think that it references a lot of things that we've seen before, but its execution is solid, so yeah, definitely check it out if you have a chance.
There's things, I mean, I've seen only the first episode, but I mean, there's things I certainly like about what it's trying to do, and I'm just curious how it kind of goes off of that. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, if we have an extended discussion later, not crazy extended because it's Netflix, but yeah, I mean, we can certainly discuss the references that it goes in, because I'm pretty certain that you guys, you and Alex, have seen way more movies than I have, so you guys would probably pick up the references, more nuanced references, actually. So, yeah, I'd be curious.
Alex, have you been able? Do you have Netflix? Or there is a different in Germany as far as those are original?
No, there is a different. There is a different one, but it is a Netflix series. So,
it automatically.
Yeah, I did. I watched it. I finished the whole series too.
Were you
that
a
was
fan?
One of them I was going to mention. I am. Like you said, like Abe said, I think there's just this like it. The execution of it is so great. Like, it repeats things that the like villain kind of part is kind of weak, but it's just like, you know what? There's so much like cool atmosphere to it, and the kids are great, and it's just like, and so enjoyable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I had so much fun with it. Yeah.
Alex, have you seen any of their movies recently?
I mean, I wish I had something cool to mention, but the only thing I've seen recently that I didn't hate, which in parentheses means Suicide Squad, was was Ghostbusters, the new one. Because it finally came out here, and you guys probably talked about it like four episodes ago.
Yeah.
I actually kind of liked it. And also, in parentheses, because it was better than Suicide Squad. Because like I had such a bad taste in my mouth, and I was like, I want a good, enjoyable, like stupid, fun summer movie. And Ghostbusters kind of like gave me that. I know it's not perfect. I know it has a lot of problems. Like, there is no story, but it was like, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. For some reason, I don't know. I had read all these terrible reviews where I'm like, "Oh, this is going to be miserable," and I was like, "Yeah, this is actually kind
of
fun."
That's basically where we kind of let off with it when we talked about it.
Yeah.
It's not perfect by any means, but it's still fun and enjoyable for the most part. I don't know about the most part, but it's still fun and enjoyable.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It is a shame though that you saw, you know, you have Paul Feig, who's, you know, been very successful as far as what he's been accomplishing in his comedies, and you have to be like dreadfully looking forward to something like that, as opposed to being like, Paul Feig's making a new action comedy thing with Ghostbusters. Like, you think that'd be something to be, you know, worth being excited about.
But my thing with Paul Feig all the time is that I'm doubting his films, and then I see them and I'm like, man, he's such a good filmmaker. Why am I always doubting his films? Every time. Like, even Spy, I was like, oh, this is not going to be good. I'm like, what? This is so good.
Yeah, Spy I was surprised by. Mainly because I'm not a huge Melissa McCarthy fan. So I was like, all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, regardless, yeah, Ghostbusters, you know, it was fine, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen a couple things. And I'm going to mention Florence Foster Jenkins. This is the new Meryl Streep, Hugh Grant film from director Stephen Frears, who did The Queen and Philomania, as we all like to call it. and it's about Meryl Streep plays based on a true story of this woman, Florence Foster Jenkins, who during it's set during 1944 New York, and she's this kind of heiress. She's very wealthy, and she has clubs and things, and she like women's clubs and things, and she aspires to be like an opera singer. She was like a pianist early in age until that kind of went. She had health issues, and she wants to be an opera singer, but she has a terrible, terrible, terrible singing voice, and it's about how Hugh Grant, who plays her kind of common-law husband, he does his best to, when she performs, and she only performs so many times, but when she performs, he makes sure that the audiences are very limited so people don't kind of spread the word to not hurt her feelings and how terrible of a singer she is. And what she's most known for, though, is that she did, in fact, sing to a sold-out crowd in Carnegie Hall. And the movie is just, basically, it's a comedy drama about all that. And I think it's pretty good. I even say in my review, I've been kind of over white people coming over adversity movies, as well as Meryl Streep going really big kind of movies. And despite those things being what this movie is, I really enjoyed this movie. It's a lot of fun. I tend to like Stephen Frears films in general, and it's a really well-acted movie. Meryl Streep's very good, and Hugh Grant's really good, too. And so is Simon Helberg, who's in The Big Bang Theory. I don't watch The Big Bang Theory, but Simon Helberg.
Neither do I.
Like, yeah, he's
How long is this movie?
What?
How long is it?
It's under 2 hours. It's like an hour,
okay.
50.
Hour 40?
Hour 50.
Okay, all
right. Yeah, so well, like if you like other like recent Frears from like The Queen or Philomena, which are, you know, they're dramas with like hints of comedy in them. This one's more overtly comedic, but it's quite good.
It's good.
Aaron, my question is, in the marketing, they never show her sing. Does she sing? And my thought was like, is it so miserable that it's hard to watch? Or
I think,
is it just like a fun singing?
I think because the singing is so like specific to a reveal of the movie and what it like hinges on, that it doesn't want to like ruin what the surprise is of how bad she sings. So I think it tries to like hold that so you go and see the movie so you can see for yourself. But she did, like Meryl Streep did actually sing live to do in the movie. And
I know, but is it so bad you're like, oh my god, I can't watch this scene? Or is it like, well, oh, this is funny?
There's a cringy aspect to it, but I think the movie does a good job of making it kind of both work as far as like an office type cringy humor, as well as having you feel for that character as she's singing. Like, so okay. It gets you to be on her side despite you. It's very like pitchy. That's the kind of the way she sings. And I mean, you can find, like, they have the actual recording of the real Florence Foster Jenkins. You can find it. You can hear it, but
All of our listeners are going to go seek that out right now.
It's hard not to laugh at, like, just because, like, as you, the Simon Helberg, he plays her pianist, and he's brought in without knowing what she sings like, and you every expression on his face is exactly like what you're feeling as an audience member the first time he hears her sing. Mm. But it's handled well.
That's good.
And he played his own piano, by the way. So they have, like, Meryl Streep's really singing bad on purpose, and he's really playing piano. So it's
it's real.
Yes, from the effort put into it, from an authenticity standpoint. Thank you. it plays quite well. But yeah, that's Florence Foster Jenkins that opened in America this week in select theaters. So.
I all the reviews are so good. So it's interesting to hear that.
And yeah, that's on our quickies.
Yep.
Let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk. We discussed one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, what have you. The first trailer we're going to talk about, or the trailer we're going to talk about, is Arrival. This is a new film from Denis Villeneuve, who previously directed Sicario, Prisoners, and Enemy. All good films in their own right, I would say.
Yeah.
And this film stars Amy Adams from Sea Dragons, Jeremy Renner, and Forest Whitaker. This trailer is very cryptic on purpose, but it involves a team of, I guess, experts and whatever, team of scientists going to explore an alien craft. And before we get any kind of hint of what actually happens, trailer cuts short. Now, I will say that this is technically, it's a minute long, but it's technically a teaser trailer for the actual trailer. So there's more of this trailer, but I feel like what we're about to discuss, I feel like I'm kind of sold on this movie just from that alone, yeah. Right there. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, I don't need it. It's like, I just show me the movie now. I don't want to see any more.
Yeah, certainly feel that way as well. It's a minute long, and there's, I think, enough intrigue just built there from the character standpoint. Because again, like we said, they're all specialists, but Amy Adams looks like she's a language specialist. Jeremy Renner, I'm not sure, and then
he needs his gems.
Yeah, he definitely does. Jason Bourne in space. And then Forrest Whitaker seems like he's the muscle, right? The military muscle.
Yeah, when I think Forrest Whitaker, I think the muscle.
Exactly, yeah. And a lazy eye. But,
ghost dog.
Right, yeah. But in any case, I enjoyed it. I think I especially liked the cinematography, even though, again, only a minute long. But there was this one scene where it's an overhead scene, and there's some beautiful fog rolling over some of the mountains. And then in the spaceship itself, that was very neat, the way that I wasn't expecting what they did with the zero gravity, but reverse gravity in it too, which is cool.
Well, as we know, Villeneuve's last film, Sicario, was done by Roger Deakins. He did not come back for this film.
That's right. I looked it up immediately.
But it is Bradford Young, who is quite acclaimed in his own right, and he's quite young, too. He did Selma, A Most Violent Year, Pawn Sacrifice, Ain't Them Body Saints, from the director of Pete's Dragon, by the way. He's building up his own resume right there, and I based off of what Villeneuve's been able to accomplish just on a visual standpoint in his films, I'm certainly excited to see what he has next, both in terms of what he's going to be presenting us and just learning about more of whatever this story is.
Yeah, that's what's so cool about it. I'm sure you guys noticed it was originally called Story of Your Life when it was written. It's weird because it's like, how does that pertain to an Alien Arrival movie? and therefore,
it just uses the Social D song as a way to go.
It's just like, well, what the heck is this really about? And that's my concern, is I hope the next trailer doesn't show too much. Obviously, they're not going to show the aliens. That's going to be like, you have to go see the movie. But it's like, I don't want them to reveal too much more about this, because it is so much built upon the mystery. And that's why this is such a great trailer, is that like, it makes you go, oh my goodness, and I want to see this. And then, like you said, right at the moment it cuts, and it's like, don't give away too much in the next trailer, because this one was so good.
I'm hoping that the full trailer is just more like of the same buildup that leads into them going there, and not just more of what happens after they get there.
Yeah, exactly. So. I mean,
they're going to show you the monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to reveal it.
Maybe they're not monsters. Maybe it's a bunch of clones.
They're going to be humans. It's going to be Contact Part 2.
I will say it is based off a short story by Ten Chiang, and it's written by Eric Heiser. The resume here is not the most inspiring. The filmography. Final Destination 5, which is actually the best one. Yep. A Nightmare on Elm Street, the remake, The Thing, prequel, remake, whatever the hell, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Lights Out, which I liked.
Okay.
So, you know.
No, he's a good writer. He just has been, like, I've talked to him about, like, his Thing script, and it was totally butchered. So, like.
Okay.
He's a good writer. It just is, like John Spates as well, who wrote Passengers this year. Like,
yeah.
If you look at his resume, you're like, man, this guy makes crap movies. But then you're like, no, he's actually a brilliant writer. He just scripts get kind of tinkered with.
John Spates, he did Prometheus, right?
Yeah, well, he co-wrote it.
Drew Goddard? Or not Drew Goddard. No, what's his face? From Lost.
Damon Lindelof.
Yeah, it was a D. And it was a D. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I think we're all looking forward to Arrival. I feel like I'll probably check out the full version of the trailer just to be here. Unless I might just stop it at a point where I'm like, I think I can stop this right here. We'll see. But regardless, the film comes out November 11th.
Soon.
So we'll look forward to that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on now. Let's move on to our main film review for Pete's Dragon.
How long has he been out there?
6 years.
Nobody can survive in that forest for 6 years. At least not alone.
You'll see. I have Elliot.
Who's Elliot?
I need to get back to him. He gets scared when I'm gone.
Is Elliot a person?
No.
He looks like a dragon.
What's a dragon? A dragon.
That should have been some of the trailer for Pete's Dragon. Disney continues to work on a new franchise of sorts, modern updates of their films, namely live-action adaptations. Pete's Dragon was only partially animated, The Dragon, and it's no classic, but director David Lowery of Ain't Them Body Saints has come aboard to make basically an all-new story of a boy and his dragon. This time around, Pete finds himself being raised in a forest with the help of Elliot, a big green dragon covered in fur. Pete is eventually found by other humans, which leads to various new discoveries, both on their part and with Pete, as he learns what it's like to live in the real world. Of course, the secret of the dragon is just too big to hide. Alex, what do you have any familiarity with the original Pete's Dragon film?
I mean, I know I watched it, but I don't have like a fondness of it. Yeah, and one of my questions is, do you remember, does the dragon talk in the original?
Yeah, the dragon does talk. It's like a musical comedy thing, and the dragon does talk. It's based around like a lighthouse. There's a lot of it's supposed to be like an imaginary friend. Anna's helping me out with some of the details on this, and it feels more of like a Mary Poppins type ish story, a dragon instead of, you know, a magical cleaning maid.
I think the joke my friend Ray made today was that, like, it's one of those movies everyone knows but doesn't remember.
Yeah, because it's not a movie. It's, like I said, it's not a classic. Like, people can recall it that it exists, but it's not a movie where people go back to and be like, man, Pete's Dragon was the bee's knees back in the day. It's just more of a movie
that exists. The bee's knees.
That's what the kids say.
I know. Yeah. I was just surprised.
So, with that in mind, Alex, what were your thoughts on this Pete's Dragon?
Oh, man, I believe in magic. I love this new movie so much. I honestly, like, genuinely loved it in a way where I don't know why I wasn't expecting it. I'm a big fan of David Lowery, and I kind of hoped he would pull it off. But just like the way it starts, how much spoiler can we discuss, by the way?
I mean, you don't have to go into the ending, but you can talk about where. I mean, obviously the dragon will be discovered at some point. I mean, that's kind of
well,
goes.
No, that's the great thing about it, is that there isn't this like long reveals of the dragon. It's like the first couple of scenes, he meets the dragon, he befriends him in the forest, you've seen him, and then like there's those like flying scenes right in the first 15 minutes where I'm like, okay, this is amazing, you've got me into it. And then you actually start the story, and then it goes into it more, and it's built upon emotion, which is works well for throughout the rest of it. And then the other thing that I really loved about it, that I think David Lowery is good at, is the way the music plays into it. Not only Like there's that lullaby or whatever at one point, but then just like the way he chooses songs that play into it, like over the radio and then back, and it's like everything adds this like feeling to it that just by the end I'm like I cried a couple times. I'll fully admit to you, not like huge bawling, but just like the couple moments where you're like, oh man, I feel you, man. I believe in the magic. And
German Redford. Film critic Alex Billington balls during Pete's draft.
I didn't bawl, but I said I said in my tweet that I didn't tear up a little, and it's just because I think. The other things I'll say, it is definitely a kid's movie, but it's a kid's movie that really works, that like really touches you. Like there's all the Robert Redford lines are the cheesiest lines of the year, where he's like, you must believe in magic. Like he literally says it and you're like, but I believe you, Redford, we gotta believe in the dragon, you know. It all works. I just had so much fun with it. I was just like, I actually can't wait to see it again. I multiple times probably, where even though I'm not a kid anymore, it like brings that kid out in me where you're just like, yes, I love it. And I guess the last thing I'll say is that the dragon reminded me of a dog so much, which is something we can talk about, that I'm just like, it felt like a boy and his dog movie, and how much that like these two just have a fun adventure and they love each other. And yeah.
Abe, it's been no secret that you have not been the most anticipation, had the most anticipation for Pete's Dragon.
Thank you for using that adjective, because that is correct. I wasn't super anticipating this movie, and I walked into it with very low to zero expectations, not in a pejorative way at all, but just, you know, very neutral.
We're gonna put up a picture now of you crossing your arms as you walked into the theater with a big scowl on your face.
Right.
Put, like one of, put like, that Jeff up on the monitor, guys. Okay.
Yeah, Jeff Dunham's puppet, the old guy. In any case, partially the reason why is because I am familiar with the original source material, and there's a green dragon with like pink hair animated with real life stuff. So in any case, I like this movie. I think that it's very good. The reasons why I like it are is that it's a simple premise, and it takes place in a remote location, small town. So it's not as though they wanted to go crazy big in terms of action sequences and whatever else. There's no really overtly bad characters, meaning like bad guy characters. And that's because it doesn't fall into tropes. Like you, from the trailers, it feels like Carl Urban might be playing that character. But, you know, he's actually...
he basically is. It's just not...
Yeah, I mean, he's
not full on. He's not trying to like kill the dragon.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's no like military scene. There's no like, you know, army helicopters coming in and everyone's got to be like quarantined. Nothing like that. It's fairly subtle. And also the reason why I like it is because the characters are solid. Like what Alex had mentioned, Robert Redford might have some cheesy lines, but hey, he's not overdoing it. Nobody's really overdoing it. And there's not a whole lot of dialogue, but it's effective, and there's great non-dialogue scenes as well. So overall, I actually think between this and the BFG, there's two solid family movies this summer.
Just wait till you get to next week, Abe.
Dude, I am.
Don't worry about it. Just saying.
I am totally freaking out that it's not here already. But in any case, it certainly reminds me of something like, almost like a reverse How to Train Your Dragon, but also,
How to Train Your Pete.
Yeah, exactly. How to Train Your Pete. Jungle Book and Good Dinosaur. But yeah, I certainly enjoyed it for its low-keyness and its simplicity, along with some of the great cinematography that was in the movie.
Low-key is certainly a great word to use in talking about this new Pete's Dragon. I have a question for you guys. Did you guys realize it was set in the 80s?
No.
I didn't think about it at the time, but now that everyone mentions it, it's like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't really put that together, and it's not that that matters, but like, right. Yeah, the movie, like it's set like in like the mid '80s or whatever. And it's like, oh well, that I guess that adds up as far as like just basic like, hey, there's no iPhones or whatever.
Right. Yeah. But it does... I certainly noticed that where they're driving older trucks, like older Chevy Silverado trucks, and they have rotary landlines. But I was just thinking, well, that's just the way that they want to live.
And it's just the low key aspect of the film where it is. It's not a film that's reliant on a whole bunch of other things like Abe, you're talking about. Like there's no like, you know, government agents coming in or anything like that. It tells a very simple story. The movie's fairly light on plot, really. Like it starts off with, you know, a tragic event to set up who Pete is and why he's in the woods. But once it gets going, yeah, it doesn't make any attempt to kind of to have the dragon really overshadow anything. If anything, David Lowery gets a lot of credit for how he uses Elliot. Like it's very I wouldn't say minimal because there's a lot of the dragon in this movie, but it doesn't overshadow the actors. It doesn't feel like it's, it doesn't, it never feels like it's the dragon's movie. And I find that, I found that to be an interesting approach to the story. It's a very good special effect. I mean, it's not the, there's nothing bad about it, but it's not, you know, it's not like the Jungle Book where it seems like the latest and greatest technology was used to make sure that this dragon looks, you know, supremely amazing in every second. It's a movie that just has it essentially blending in the background of other forest life and what have you. And I appreciated that quite a bit. Because, like you guys are also saying, the characters are well done for the most part. I really like this, particularly Pete. I like the young actor Oakes Fegley playing.
Oh, that wasn't a young Ryan Adams.
No, I like the young actor performance here. I thought he did a good job bringing both kind of a, obviously there's a physicality involved regardless of whatever stunts were used, but you know there's a introspective nature to his character because he's very quiet, like for obvious reasons, when he gets introduced to a new town. It's neat to see him as he kind of opens up into this, you know, this new world he's discovering, which is technically the world he's from to begin with. And then you have, you know, the subtle performances from the supporting actors, particularly Robert Redford, like you're saying, because he's Robert Redford. He can do that kind of thing. He can sell those cheesy lines and not have to overplay them or anything. And even like Wes Bentley. Like, he doesn't have much to do in this movie, but he's like here, and he just has this, and he's, you know, he's definitely using beards in all of his movies now. We've established that. And he does a good job. I would say I was less enamored by Carl Urban and Bryce Dallas Howard because I thought they were, there's not a lot of overdoing it, but I feel like they were kind of overdoing it. Like, Bryce Dallas Howard does a lot of, like, opening her eyes really wide and saying, oh my god, I never knew about this before, that kind of thing. And there's a lot of Carl Urban, like, going, I think, pretty over the top towards the...
Is he?
I think, or toward the end.
Okay, all right.
And, I mean, in general, like, I mean, he has to establish himself as a antagonistic force of the movie if it needs one to begin with. But, it's the kind of thing I can't fault it too hard for because it is, at the end of the day, a kid's movie, so it needs to make it somewhat overt despite some of the low-keyness and other things going on. But It was the kind of thing that stuck out to me. I don't know if it's necessarily a negative, per se, but it is something that's like, okay, this is a lot of Carl Urban being, like, just, like, super hard Carl Urban. Who's an actor that...
He's literally Bones in this movie, like, with the voice and everything. He just decided to be on Earth now.
Yeah.
He's probably in the middle of shooting that, anyway.
Could be.
That's actually a great point. Yeah, he probably was. What was your question, Aaron?
No, I was just going to say, aside from, you know, the minor gripes like that, you mentioned the cinematography. I think the cinematography in this movie is pretty outstanding. I mean, for like a mainstream film, this might be one of the best shot movies of the year.
Mm-hmm. Who did it, by the way, now that you mention it?
Who did the cinematography? I can
look. If Aaron delays everybody, I can certainly look it up in less than 20 seconds.
Because... I got it. It's it's Bojan Bozelli, who...
That's what I was going to say. I knew that offhand.
I know, like, he has a lot of credits here, but I think a lot of these he's been only, like, kind of involved with, but not the main cinematographer on. This might be one of his first, like he's, like, head director of photography on the movie.
It says he was, like, DOP on The Lone Ranger.
I looked this up here before because I was curious about it earlier. I just forgot his name, but, like, it's more of, like, he's associated with a lot of these films, but not necessarily the key cinematographer in these. Hmm.
B unit director.
Yeah, I don't know him. I don't know him very well. Yeah. But you know, you're right. It does look fantastic.
It captures the Pacific Northwest quite well. Like, it's a great environment for this film. The kind of the use of the forest.
Is that where they are?
The Pacific Northwest. Yeah,
yeah,
it's somewhere like Washington or Oregon or something.
Yeah, that was another thing someone mentioned where they were like the location is so vague throughout it.
Yeah,
and like I think one of my writers was like, did you know that it would he brought up a question about how Bryce Dallas Howard was telling them to go to the other side of the forest, and then suddenly they were like on the other side of the forest finding him, and they were like, the location between these places didn't really make sense. Did you see that too? And I was like, yeah, but whatever.
You know what? They shot in New Zealand.
It's like, they did?
I know, which is weird. Oh.
They shot in New Zealand. It's supposed to be like
Carl Urban's hometown.
I mean, yeah, I think if you put some thought into it, you'd be like, yeah, it makes sense that New Zealand would be that tends to be where a lot of things are shot these days. But
that's probably why it's so vague, is they're like, well, they're just trees, and
yeah,
do some aerial tree shots, and you're not going to know anything.
Well, there's hardly a town. There's like one street that you see, essentially, in like a house.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not
which
like,
is,
right.
But I enjoyed that aspect of it. It's like
yeah,
the
it's
small
supposed
town
to be like
space.
An any town type thing, but obviously like a visual aesthetic of forest.
Yeah,
but what I was saying about the forest, like specifically about the same, like it, you're seeing the same forest, but it's presented in like a number of different tones. Like at some point, it's playful because you have Elliot and Pete like hanging around in the forest or whatnot. Then you have things like certain destruction taking place, and you kind of get a different mood when you see certain characters revisit like a home in the forest, and it's like it has a whole different mood to it. So I think it's a neat, for a film that's, you know, fairly simplistic, it does a good job of giving you different degrees of the same locations you're seeing in a way that still presents itself as visually wondrous.
Yeah, that's true too. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there were some nitpicks about it, but I forgave those, and some of those were, well, how does Pete gain extra vocabulary aside from 5-year-old Pete?
He read that book a lot.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he could have been overhearing conversation all the time. And again, they established enough for me to say, well, he knows language, so it's not as though he's going to be mute forever. Or
it's not like he's given detailed soliloquies at the end of this movie.
I understand, but just you'll see in Stranger Things that there's some interesting things they do with language. Okay. But you know, something like that. Where and also, how come Elliot, for whatever reason, sometimes he's really good at landing and sometimes he's not really good at landing? So you know, just a small nitpick. Like he has trouble landing on the chimney stack. And he lands crazily in a field, but when he's got people on him, he lands very softly.
I think it has to do with a familiarity of his environment. Like, I think it comes down
to... That could
be
it.
I mean, both also, you know, he's growing. Like, he's not... Growing up and not knowing an area of how to fly or what it's going to be like when you land on something, because I know dragons.
Yeah, Alex, you want to chat about the dogness of Elliot?
No, I mean, yeah, you actually guys were kind of mentioning this anyways. That it's like he doesn't feel like a dragon in the Dragonheart sense. He feels like a dog, like that's like exactly what you're explaining. Like he's kind of got this like goofiness to him, and he doesn't speak in this one. That's why I was asking that question earlier. He's just like he has the noises of it. And...
I'm curious if there was like a round table producer discussion, like dragon talk this time, and like what decisions they came down to. Obviously, he's not talking.
Someone made a good point recently where it was like, if almost he would have mumbled or like said something like, you know, but like not actually made out full words. But then I think that would have been too much, especially with the realism of the movie and like also trying to convince people that this thing exists. I think that's probably why they modeled it after a dog, is they're like, well, that kind of makes it feel more realistic in a sense. Like,
it gets a lot of eyebrow play, that's for sure.
You couldn't like believe if the dragon was talking, you know, despite Robert Redford saying you got to believe in the magic of the talking dragon. You still wouldn't believe that, but if it's like the like his pal, you're like, "Oh yeah, I get it. This is cute. Like it works." And I think that's what really touched the emotion in me, is it's like a lot of the story plays up to that aspect of like he's just his pal and he just wants to protect him, and they play together and like that's it. They make tree houses together, you know.
Intricate tree houses, which are really nice.
Which I wish they spent more time in before it got destroyed, spoiler.
Yeah, that was actually a really nice tree that they chose. I don't know why I'm talking about the tree the type, but it was very large and robust.
I agree. I mean, that's what I'm talking about when I talk about just kind of the mood of the movie. I think that it uses that tree specifically as a way to kind of change around the tone and what's happening. And it works. Yeah. Like it allows the film to have a level of... It allows the film to be layered, I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's telling a boy and his dog type story, like you mentioned, Alex. But it's also telling a story about a kid coming to grips with his situation and growing, and you know, growing into, you know, as he's maturing, he can't stay in the forest forever. So it's, you know, it's giving some ideas of where things go. And obviously, the dragon. There's some backstory involving Elliot as far as why he's in the woods, and so you know it. They're like two lost souls, and the movie finds a good, you know, it's a very soulful film to begin with, and it finds a good way of treating them in a way where it doesn't feel like it's riffing off too many other. I mean, you can think of like E.T. or Iron Giant, obviously, but I mean, it's not. It doesn't feel like it's riffing off of those. It feels like it's trying to tell its own story, and it does a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree with that. Go ahead, Alex.
No, I was going to say briefly, one of the things that I don't know if this is a criticism is that it was the weird complex story moment where like. He goes, the dragon comes to his house and he like sees him hanging out with the family. He's all like super sad and unhappy. And then he's like, you know, F this kid, but not really saying that. But then he like flies home, you know? And then like the next scene, they go find him in the woods and he's like, oh, he's happy again. I'm like, wait a minute. Wasn't he just really sad that he was with his family and now he doesn't give a shit? I don't know. It was weird. It was a brief moment of like, I mean, I didn't, I guess I forgive it, but it was like a weird moment of like, Didn't they just play this as the dragon being upset, and now he doesn't mind this?
If you want to call into question some of the logic, I mean, the movie presents an idea where Pete's been, like, with Elliot for 5 years, but, like, in one weekend, Bryce Dallas Howard is able to convince her to, like, live with them for, like, forever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's missing a lot of booster shots, by the way. So. The other small nitpick is, why is that little Asian girl always running? I mean, I think we need to start a Kickstarter to get her a bike, so that she can go and listen to Robert Redford's stories with the other kids and not have to run and be sweaty by the time she gets there.
Whoa.
Just saying.
Thanks, Abe.
Yeah. Were there any things that you guys, other things that you guys didn't like about the film? I mean, I know that it's, there's not a whole lot of main characters, but I think Isaiah Whitlock Jr., I was kind of hoping that he would actually have more of a role.
Yes,
Or more of a more screen presence, more screen time. I
wouldn't
say.
Be surprised if there's, like, you know, the movie's an hour 40 and change. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's kind of more character beats to flesh them out. But at the same time, Alex, I know you might have something to add, but, like, I don't know if I need it. Like, I don't know what more of the sheriff I was supposed to really need in this movie.
It wasn't more. It was this is what I wanted to mention to you guys. There's so in the trailer, there's, like, his line of on the radio where he's like, "You can't say it's a dragon," or whatever. And you know, that, like, brief moment of comedy. And so the rest of the movie, I'm like, oh, there's got to be some good comedy. There never was any. And then that was the one major comedic moment. And then I'm thinking to myself, like, I wanted more of that. Like, I wanted more of the, like, not the totally goofy, because that moment of them talking finally worked. Because this is, like, they had just found the dragon, and they were chasing it and all that. And I'm almost like, I wanted a little bit more of that kind of levity, or, like, the realistic levity where they're like, dude, we're chasing a freaking dragon, you know?
Well,
like,
I heard that the editors behind the Suicide Squad trailer made an alternate cut of this movie. And so,
that I believe, yeah. They chopped out all of Isaiah Whitlock's rest of his
all his
lines.
Winning dingers that he had.
Yeah. Including where he goes, "She."
Someone said that. They're like, why isn't this in this movie?
It would go well in the police car scene moment.
Well, not a she, but a something like that. Where he's like, it's a drag. You know, they're just like, because that would have been perfect. Yeah, it would have been perfect.
Actually, would have been nice.
It was weird to me that they like put that in the trailer so much as like, oh, hey, this movie's gonna be funny, and then there was not much other comedy in it that I can recall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the other the Disney live action movie so far. They haven't really had much, like, overtly goofy humor. And even, like, Jungle Book's fairly, like, straight up adventure.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, obviously the, you know, this isn't like a fran, this isn't a, like, a connected universe in the same way that, you know, others are, but, like, it certainly has a, I feel like there's a lot of similar sensibilities in how these movies are being made between this and Jungle Book and Cinderella. I mean, as far as the most recent examples go. So yeah. It doesn't tend to be too much humor in any, like, there's, you know, there's moments that, you know, make you smile or what have you, but
I mean, I laughed my ass off at Maleficent, but that was just me.
It makes me wonder if this is like a Disney decision, though, because you take their animated movies and they're like goofy characters are forced into it, mm-hmm. and they have all these stupid lines, and so you're like, okay, obviously to sell the kids you have to have these really stupid characters. But then they're not in the live-action movies. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of, like, Disney thing where they're like, okay, we need to actually make this serious, so we need to not pack it in with goofiness.
I mean, it could be a product of, like, how they test these films. Like, you know, you look at, like, you know, they have a version that has more of the goofy lines, and, you know, they see how they respond to stuff like that or what have you. That's a guess, but it feels like it is kind of in line with the other live-action remakes so far.
Yeah, I would love to ask David Lowery these kind of questions and be like, you know, how much more was there? How much
today's your chance. Here he is.
We're bringing him
David,
in. Yes, we entered him into a fake best mustache costume what contest, and he won. So he's going to be on the show. But no, yeah, I mean, it is curious. And I'd be curious. I mean, if the eventual Blu-ray has, like, deleted scenes of all those Isaiah Whitlock zingers, we'll see.
I doubt it.
And I'm pretty, you know, like you had mentioned, it's not as though it takes away from the movie, because I think it's good as it is. But I was just curious if there was going to be more of Isaiah Whitlock Jr.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that out of the way. Any other final thoughts before we wrap it up on the review?
I kept on waiting for Una Lawrence to go and find Jake Gyllenhaal, but that didn't happen. So, what was that movie called? The Fighter?
Southpaw.
Southpaw, yeah.
You're way off. wrong method actor. All right.
Who's the fighter? Is that Mark Wahlberg?
That's Marky Walls and Christy Bales.
Okay, all right. The fighter? Oh, yes! All right, okay.
All right. With that said, when should people go and see Pete's Dragon?
I definitely think you should see it in theaters. I mean, I think that there's a lot of good cinematography that warrants you seeing it on the big screen.
Yeah, I agree. In theaters. Go check it out now.
Yeah, I say see it in theaters. I think it's a solid watch, especially, you know, for a family audience. And just in the midst of a summer that's had a lot of meh coming out. It's like, oh, this is a nice, refreshing film to watch.
Yeah,
yeah.
Less strings attached to it.
Is it in 3D? Do you guys know?
It is in 3D. I saw it. Anna and I, we saw it in 3D. And,
worth it?
Anna, give me a head shake if it was good in 3D or not. I'm getting a meh. All
right. Okay.
It'd be fine.
I saw it flat.
Yeah, if it's called Pete's Dragon 2 Constant Flying, then maybe that'd be more fun to see in 3D. But because of all the, it's like, I don't know how many extreme close-ups of Robert Redford I need to see in 3D. So.
They're really good with makeup these days, so, you know.
You know, I was almost, because it's Disney and because we've seen those Marvel movies, I was kind of almost expecting a Robert Redford flashback to have his de-aging on. So he's like, oh, that's young Robert Redford.
That's almost what I thought the opening scene was.
I kind of almost thought, it's a weird kind of framing device, isn't it? Like, there's some spoilery things that I can't get into, but there's some things involving like how the movie's framed where even Anna thought the same thing, where it's like, you think like Robert Redford be like a grown-up version of Pete or something like that, but it's like, that's not the case at all. He's just that random old man that happened to see a dragon once. All right.
Cool.
Let's move on now. That was our review for Pete's Dragon. Let's get to our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible? Well, Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook download of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Use a book down for free and start listening. It's just that easy. audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. You can check out the service. If you don't like it, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that book they download for free. So be a winner.
And read.
Or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Let's move on now. Let's get to some feedback.
All right, feedback.
Is where we go over the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where we asked a number of questions, and you listeners gave us some answers, and we also asked you to give us some questions, and we're going to give you some answers. Alex, feel free to join in on any of these if you like to.
Okay.
And here we go. Here's the first question. What would you name your pet dragon? Nippon writes Falcor.
Great name.
Maxwell writes Giles.
It's a great name, too.
Philip has Liz Breath Salamander, the dragon with the girl tattoo.
Wow.
And the lovely Anna writes Alameda, the dragon.
It's also a good name. I'd go with Philomena. Yeah. Great pet dragon name.
Philomena.
Great pet dragon name, yeah. Voiced by Dame Judi Dench herself.
Whenever it flies by, a score by Alexander Desplat would start playing.
Academy Award winner Alexander Desplat, yeah.
Yes, Academy Award winner Alexander Desplat.
All right, next question we ask everybody. What are some of your favorite childhood books? April writes, The Boxcar Children was the first series of books I remember being hooked on. I agree, April. I also love The Boxcar Children. Philip has Heinlein's Juveniles, Anne McCaffrey's Pern series, Lloyd Alexander's Chronicles of
Prydain?
Prydain. Sorry, Philip, I butchered that. My bad. A friend of the show, Maxwell, has From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler, The Hardy Boys, Holes, also a great book by Lewis Sackar, A Wrinkle in Time, and the Goosebumps series, etc. Manish writes Harry Potter, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Boxcar Children, Who Stole the Wizard of Oz? Joe Jans has The Secret of Nim, which is a great book series. Anna writes The Little Engine That Could, Love You Forever, The Little Golden Book Series, specifically The Little Red Hen and Beauty and the Beast, just to name a couple, and The Stinky Cheese Man and other fairly stupid tales. So thanks for that, Anna.
You guys have any favorite childhood books?
The Westing Game is one of my favorite childhood books as well.
Alex?
Watching Game?
The Westing Game.
Yeah, some of these I haven't heard of. I'm like, wow, I want to read these. Mm-hmm. No, the only series that I remember fondly reading, I actually like have wanted them to make this, was the Redwall series, about the mouse. Do you guys remember this?
That sounds vaguely familiar. Anna's agreeing heartily.
I remember Ralph Esmus.
I mean, I was a big Dr. Seuss fan for one thing, and also I did read all the Chronicles of Narnia books. So that was probably
all seven of them, huh?
Yeah, all seven of them.
Oh, that's...
I know where it goes.
Yeah, good on you.
It has an ending.
Yeah, it certainly does. And
I've always been curious to see how that would come out if these movies end. What Sony just acquired the Silver Chair, so they're gonna keep going.
I'm glad, because wasn't the last one not bad?
I like the voyage. I mean, that's my favorite book in the series, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. So I was, like, by default, really excited to see that. And it was fine. Like, it's not one that I'm like, man, I can't wait to watch it again. But it's like, it was a decent adaptation.
Do you think they're going to have the original cast back and pretend that they're still teenagers?
I think they're rebooting. So, yeah. But that's it. Like, I wasn't huge on The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And Prince Caspian's like, wow, this is really violent for PG. But Don Treader's like, yeah, all right, this works.
It's not bad.
It's like set entirely on a ship, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it has,
which is weird because like the rest of the movie or the other movies are so much different. And then I was like, whoa, I kind of want to see this.
Yeah, it's that's part of it. It's fairly different from the other ones for that reason. It has a kind of a high seas voyage adventure. So,
yeah.
Anyway, favorite Robert Redford film. Joe writes The Natural and The Sting. Apple writes The Natural. Philip writes The Natural. A lot of people like The Natural. Anish writes The Way We Were and 3 Days of the Condor. That's a great one. Anna writes All the President's Men. Another great one. I'm a big fan of The Sting and Butch Cassidy and The Nets Kid. Those are kind of my go-to Redford movies. You guys?
That one senator in Lions for Lambs, because, you know, who doesn't love Tom Cruise, right?
No one says that movie.
No, but that was actually a good scene, because that was also young. What's his name? Who is he talking to? He's in Hacksaw Ridge. Now I'm totally forgetting his name.
Hacksaw Ridge. What's his name? Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Yes, wasn't it Andrew Garfield that he was?
I like you said Hacksaw, not Spider Man. You said Hacksaw Ridge.
It was just on my mind.
Recent stuff, man.
Yeah, that's true. No, because that was a good scene. Line for some lines. I also want to mention one of my favorite Robert Redford films, and I want to see if you guys have seen this, is Sneakers.
I've seen Sneakers, and I'm not a big fan of Sneakers.
What? No, Aaron, get out of here. Come on, dude.
Now, I'll give you this. I saw Sneakers like in 2005 or something like that, so I didn't see it at the time. So just watching it, it's like, this feels really dated. Like, that's that kind of reaction to it. It's a great cast. And it's not like, I don't hate Sneakers. It's just like, it's not a movie where, because I know, I'm very aware that it has like a good following behind it. People grew up watching Sneakers, and it's fun. And it's just, I didn't grow up with it that way.
Hmm. And yes, it's extremely dated and cheesy in a like technology way, but it's like, it's also really cool. And who is it? Yeah, David Strathairn.
David Strathairn, Ben Kingsley's in there, Dan Aykroyd's in there,
yeah.
River Phoenix.
It's got a great cast. Sidney Poitier. Like, yeah, Sidney really Poitier. Good.
Yeah.
It's really, it's like one of my like favorite, I don't want to say guilty pleasures because it's not bad, but just like one of those, like,
no, yeah,
like you said,
like it's like an Ocean's Eleven, it's like a heist type movie. Like, yeah, it has a fun vibe going through it. Yeah. It's just, I didn't grow up with it to really kind of latch onto it in the same way.
Get out of here.
Oh, I'll add All Is Lost from recent years. All Is Lost is fantastic.
Yeah,
where he's by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Impressive to see, like, I think he was, you know, took his own sailing vibes into it. Because,
let's see, next question. Favorite film set in a forest? April writes Robin Hood and the Prince of Thieves. Manish writes Deathly Hallows Part 1. That's a fun, obscure choice. I like that one.
Yeah.
Philip writes My Neighbor Totoro. And Anna writes Miller's Crossing. Another great pick.
Not bad.
Any favorite forest movies?
Yeah, The Forest.
The forest, obviously.
The Japanese, or the American Japanese horror movie from January 2016.
The sequel to In a Sea of Trees, starring Matthew McConaughey.
Did you have one, Alex?
No, because I'm sure there's like 10 of them I'm forgetting, and it's just like, I don't know off the top of my
head. Also, the question is it partially set in a forest or all set in a forest?
I think if a forest plays a major role in the film, it's a good way to look at it.
Okay.
So what do you think?
The only thing
Lord of the Rings, Two Towers.
Yeah, there's walking trees in that. Of course, that counts.
I was also going to think this is a good one from my youth is Fern Gully.
The last.
Yeah,
that's a. Well, I was going to say classic, but maybe not. Yeah. But I haven't seen it since.
It's certainly a movie that existed when you were young.
I haven't seen that since 1994 or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. By the way, just to circle that back to Pete's Dragon, they don't go overboard with the message of deforestation either. So I was glad that they didn't kind of beat anybody over the head with it.
Yeah, I was kind of worried when they first showed Carl Urban's character. It's like, oh, here we go. We got to chop all the trees down. We're going to get right. the green message by the end. No, it's really not about that.
No,
it's not about... like the whole most horrible thing. It's just like I've seen that so many times in movies. So.
Well, it's about family. So, yeah. All right. next question we asked everybody, favorite big furry movie characters that you guys like? April has Falcor, the Luck Dragon. Jojan's writes Hagrid, which is a great answer. Philip has I Can't Beat Hagrid. And Anna writes Chewbacca.
Which is a great answer.
That is a great answer. Also, I'd also add James P. Sullivan.
Yeah, James P. Awesome. Sullivan. Yep, that's another good one. Speaking of Chewbacca, I do have to add R.I.P. for Kenny Baker, the young actor, the little person actor who played R2-D2 over, you know, the past many decades.
You know what's weird about that? I was reading reports, and it was saying that he was 83, and then some people were writing that he was 81. And I was like, I guess he was 83. So
regardless, that's a long. I'd have to gather that's probably a long, you know, span of time for you know, a little person like that, right? I don't know. I don't quite know the medical details on these kind of things, but I imagine when you're, you know, someone they're, you know, overly big or, you know, small, it's probably hard on the health for that reason. So
we need our medical expert listeners to chime in. So next week,
I would be curious. I don't want to just make that up, but it just
I agree.
Seems accurate in my eyes. Is very okay.
Last question we asked was that Alex?
No, I have to mention Totoro. Come on.
Yeah. That was,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. That was in the other question, but that applies here as well. Yeah, it's a good answer.
Yeah. Totoro is great. He flies. And the last question we asked everybody, most underrated children's movie? Matthew has, would it be trollish to say Hook? Although I do love that movie, and we had an extended conversation on Marcus writes The Brave Little Toaster. Joe writes The Cat in the Hat with Mike Myers.
That's not a real answer.
I wasn't sure if he was trolling us there. But
I think
if Joe likes
we'll see if he wants to write in and tell us if he was trolling.
If Joe honestly likes it, then good on him. And lastly, Anna writes A Little Princess, which is really good.
I will say, because this narrative seems to be forming that I hate Hook, which is true, that
wait, how can you say a narrative is forming that I hate Hook, but it's true?
It doesn't necessarily need to be a reoccurring theme on the show. The fact is, I don't think Hook is a very good movie.
Okay, all right.
I don't think I'm alone in this, but, you know, whatever.
Probably not.
underrated children's movies?
That's another one where I'm like, I know them, but I just can't.
No, I was going to say, is Hugo considered underrated?
I mean, it won multiple Academy Awards.
Okay, so maybe not, but certainly...
it wasn't the most widely seen film.
Yeah, it wasn't hugely seen, even though it was well-regarded, very well-regarded.
I was going to say, we talk about Monster House a lot on this podcast for some reason.
Yeah, that's actually, that is a good one. Who made that? And they've gone on to make another animated movie.
I think he made the Poltergeist remake, if I'm not mistaken. Guilty.
Oh, really? Okay.
Is the director's name of Monster House. I think he made something else, too. I only saw it once. It was a great 3D movie, by the way. Like, it really...
I didn't see 3D.
Really worked that... Or no, what about Gil Kane? Oh, yeah, City of Ember. That's the other movie.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, City of Ember was great.
Which I heard lots of good things about. I never saw that one.
Yeah. That was a weird one, too, because it was like, it's almost dark and deals with these big themes, but then it was like, it's still a kid's movie. It's actually really good.
Okay.
All right, let's move on now. Let's get to our questions that were asked to us. Marcus follows up his very important basketball question from last week with another question. If you could become one supermarket food, what would you be and what would your name be?
I feel like this is hashtag sausage party.
Yeah.
If I could be one supermarket food, I feel like I'd be a watermelon.
Go on.
My name would be Melon Baller.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Baller?
Mr. Baller, yeah. Melon. First name Melon, last name Baller. Sprained ankle, this ain't nothing to play with. Drake lyrics.
Anna suggesting Aaron the Asparagus, so I'm gonna go with that one. I like that.
That's not bad either.
I'd have a sweet hairdo.
Anything for you, Alex?
No.
Boxer Rice-A-Roni?
Yeah, well, sure, I'll take that.
Boom! Boxer Rice-A-Roni.
Okay,
is that,
so
is that a treat?
We got another question here. Wade, why'd you read that one?
Yep. Lastly, Philip asks us, have any of you got any scoop on what Filmstruck is going to be streaming? For instance, can we expect more Criterion titles that Hulu has, like Wes Anderson's Library, for instance?
Are you familiar with Filmstruck?
I am not. This is the first time I'm hearing of it.
I believe it's a it's a streaming service put on by TCM, I think. Let me see here. I'm looking at
Turner Classic Movies,
something like that. Yeah, it's presented by TCM and the Criterion Collection. And yeah, so I guess it's another streaming service where you just play, you know, classic films, specifically ones probably from the Criterion Collection as well as others, I imagine. I'm looking at the site now. It says commercial free, as the director intended. It has all the special features. So I guess it's like a streaming way to watch a lot of like Criterion films and other select movies of that nature. Given that Abe, Alex, and I have all not heard of it, I can't say that we have the inside scoop on anything like that. But
I'll have to do more research and I'll get back to you, Phil.
It certainly seems like an intriguing streaming service. I'm one that collects Criterion, so it's not like I necessarily need a streaming service for them. But I champion people that want to seek out those kinds of movies because they're certainly great.
Cool.
No, I was just saying, one of the issues I have now is just that there's so many streaming services.
Yeah.
Like, everyone, you have to subscribe and get it. And I'm like, all I want is they have to show up on my Apple TV or my PlayStation, and as long as it's on there. And then it's like, well, wasn't Criterion on Hulu? Like, isn't it already on these services anyway? Why does it need to be on another service?
Oh, I see. It's launching in 2000. It's launching in the fall this year. So it's this film
in a couple of months.
Yeah. So it's not out yet. So I guess I think that happened. I think Hulu had a recent thing where like they're gonna stop playing certain movies or something like that. Like in addition to other things too. I know as far as like same day streaming stuff with like CW TV shows, they're not gonna do that as much anymore or whatnot. And I see right here it's in a press release. Among the hundreds of critically acclaimed and award-winning titles to be featured on Filmstruck are Seven Samurai, A Hard Day's Night, A Room with a View, Blood Simple, My Life as a Dog, Mad Max, Breaker Morant, and The Player. So it looks like it's just a lot of Criterion films that are already on Criterion as well as that are coming, because I know Blood Simple's on the way to Criterion. Okay. So if there is some kind of change with Hulu, it looks like Filmstruck will probably be the place to go if you want to see those specific movies.
But like what Alex is saying, everything is... you're going to have a lot of subscription services and... part of the reason why I don't have cable is because I wanted to have, you know, something like Sling TV where it's $20 a month. But with all these add-ons, it's almost the same amount as like premium cable. So,
I guess it comes down to just what you want to see. Of course, you know, film buffs like us. I mean, and you know, people that like enjoy various, you know, good television programming. There's a lot of stuff out there to want to see, so it makes it hard to narrow it down.
Does this give me a moment to rant about Netflix and the fact that like it used to be the one great place where everything was, and then now all of a sudden it's like. There's nothing on there anymore, and it's all spread. Like, if it's on iTunes to rent, it's definitely not on Netflix. Like, it's annoying, you know.
I can understand that. It's the kind of for me, and this is a hashtag my own problems or what have you. But I see, I see so much, you know, in a theater that I never go to Netflix for like new release films. Like, I go there for basically their exclusives because they tend to be pretty great. And like random things that are just on there already, or like Steven stand-up specials at this point. So it's like I'm not specifically looking for like the latest blockbusters because like why would I have missed that in the theater to begin? I get what you're saying though, for sure. I understand Netflix doesn't have as for when it comes to kind of like recent releases, that's not the place to look really compared to others.
I guess that's what maybe I'm just ranting in a stupid way, but it's like that's what it was known for, and that's what I used to subscribe for. Not new releases, but just like having able access to all these films.
Yeah.
And then now they're becoming, which is obvious as well, the like network where it's like, oh, we have all our own original content, like Stranger Things. So instead of me thinking about, oh, I'm paying money for movies now, it's now I'm like, oh, well, fine, I'll pay for Stranger Things, but now I have to pay double in other services and get all these things to get all the other movies I want to see.
Netflix wasn't able to, you know, remain the best secret about how to watch movies new, I guess, for, you know, without going.
But they're named Netflix, like change your name, you know,
Halfflix. To Alex's point, I mean, if you list off the number of subscriptions that you have, that you have to go to see like a full library of films. Yeah, it's a lot, right? So, you know, you have iTunes, you have, I have Amazon Prime. I also have Netflix. I have Sling. And if you want to get HBO attached to Sling, then you could do that. Everything kind of adds up for multiple places. I'm forgetting another place where you can buy and rent movie titles. Well, I guess it'd be Amazon and iTunes as well, as YouTube.
Because, like, for me, I mean, I have cable. That said, I don't utilize cable to the full extreme. I don't watch, like, news.
I know that you're watching House Hunters International every day.
But, I mean, having Amazon Prime, I think specifically, that takes care of a, like, if anything I can't get on Netflix, I feel like I can get on Amazon Prime, it seems, where I can get both, you know, original shows there now, but also, you know, I can rent things VOD. Like, they have everything that comes VOD that I can't see in a theater. Like, that's where I can go to get stuff.
Yeah. Anyway. I guess that's a good question. Yeah, it went into a tangent on, it's today's streaming services.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, history is unfolding for us as far as how viewing various network programming is going to evolve over the next several years.
I mean,
there's much more streamlined way of doing so.
Yeah, even just a few years ago, 2 to 3 years ago, there was the whole entire talk of, well, I think movie studios are just going to be releasing straight to VOD now, so you can watch it the same time it's in theaters. And
that's still a very elaborate process that's happening.
Yeah, it certainly is, because mainly
because, like, awards, like, you know, the Oscars specifically, they're not, you know, you need to go to theater, but you can't just be a VOD release to get kind of consideration in that way.
But, I mean, that also goes back to another question that we've talked about before on the show, which is, where's the best place to watch a movie? And I think we all agree that it's a theater.
I'm a theater fan.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why even Little Prince, I want to watch it late at night when there's no sun out. And there's no cars that I can hear passing by.
Because you're a wear person.
Because what? Yeah, because
you're a wear person.
That's correct. That's correct. I'm a Lycan. So don't tell anybody. No silver bullets, please.
Okay.
Have you seen Little Prince yet, or are you still talking about seeing it?
I have.
No, I haven't yet. I will, but I haven't yet.
Yeah, that's another one I want to watch too, and it's the same thing where I'm like, oh, there's all these things that I want to watch, and I hate to now in Germany with my tiny little TV have to be like, oh, this is the first way I have to watch it. But
that's the only way you can watch it, until you use all those Germany bucks to get a projector.
Germany bucks?
True. And
yeah, they call them Deutsche
Marks. You have some Germany bucks to send to me. They're euros here, but send them.
They're
to
euros,
me.
Man. They're part of the, the EU.
Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Jeez, NATO.
Until the whole EU falls apart.
NATO. What? You're now competing to all these international organizations.
Okay, UN.
Yeah, all right, there you go.
Good all question, right. Though, yes. And the conclusion, Little Prince is great. Watch it immediately.
Really?
And we'll get back to you about film structure.
It's very good. I saw it. Anna and I watched it. It's very good.
Cool. Okay. I'm glad.
Okay.
All right. That was back.
let's move on. Abe, what time is it?
Aaron, I think it might be time for an awesome game here. That was actually the song that they played in the radio when they were driving to the forest to go meet Elliot.
That's what Isaiah was like. He's like, you can't play xylophone on the radio?
Does that sound like Keith, the Carl Urban? In any case, yeah, I do. I have a game for you guys. It's one we've played before, but I enjoyed it, and give it a second go. It's called Escalator, where we're all playing this game, but we all have to take turns naming, in this case, this week's genre of film is family movies. So you have to take turns naming a movie with one-word titles, and after we complete that round, two-word titles, three-word titles, four-word titles. And if you can't name one, then obviously you are out. So again,
Alex, you get that? You get what we're doing?
I think so.
So each of us take a turn starting out with a one-word movie title for a family film.
The word "the" counts as a word.
Okay, so the second round would be two-word movie titles and so on.
True. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's give it a go, and if we mess up, that's okay. We'll give you a second chance there, Alex. But in any case... let's go with the order of Alex, Aaron, and then Abe.
Don't start with Alex. Start with you.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll start with Abe, Aaron, then Alex.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. One-word movie title, movie titles for the genre family film, because Pete's Dragon is a family film.
Okay.
Pinocchio.
Hook.
Shrek?
Shrek. Okay.
There you go. Two-word. Now we're on two. Home Alone.
Shrek 2.
Is that the full title?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Toy Story.
All right.
Are Toy you Story.
Down, by the way?
What?
No, I'm just remembering.
Oh, okay.
Toy
okay,
Story
continue.
2. That's three words.
Shrek the Third.
The Little Mermaid.
Four-word movie titles.
Family movies? Hmm.
Miracle on 34th Street.
Okay. Unfortunately, Shrek Forever After is not four words. Let me think.
Okay.
I have one for later. Let me see. A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Counting that, I'm like, oh, I guess that works.
Yeah, okay, all right. It's not the? Well, either case, it'd still work.
Oh, it is a nightmare. That's what's crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Alex, four-word movie title?
The Wizard of Oz.
Hey, that works.
Okay.
Five-word movie title.
I can't even think of any five-word movie titles. The Lord of the Rings? Oh, shit, did I just give away one?
Let me see here.
Okay.
Five-word movie titles.
Ferngully is a four-word movie title, just saying.
Yeah. Oh, man.
What you got, Abe?
The Brave Little Toaster 2?
Nope, that's not what it's
okay.
called.
All right, because I was
it's like a Brave Little Toaster goes to Mars.
Oh, okay. I knew that had something to do with Mars. Damn it. Okay, so I'm done.
Okay. Batman, the Mask of... Wait, I fucked it up. Okay. Wait, no, I think it's Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. Let me see.
What is this? Is this even a movie?
Batman Mask of the Phantasm? What are you talking about?
Is that a family movie? Would you call that family?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
What is this? Did it come out recently?
That came out in 92. Like, how do you not remember Batman Mask of the Phantasm? That's like one of the best Batman movies.
I've never seen this. Mask of the... It's...
That would work, yeah. So it's Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah, it's not the... Yeah.
Shoot, man, I want to watch this like tonight.
It's great.
It's pretty good.
It's better than like 50% of Batman. It's better than like 70% of Batman movies.
Wow. Okay.
It's the animated series. It's just in a movie.
Yeah, it was back when the animated series was on. It was a full.
I don't think I was watching that series when it was on. Oddly.
Oh, it's a great series.
I was watching like Scooby Doo and crap like that.
Damn, is Scooby Doo a five word movie title? Like the second one.
You got a five word?
Is it not me?
Yep.
Yeah.
I might have one. Let me count it out.
Count your fingers.
Yeah. James and the Giant Peach?
Yep, that's one.
Damn it! All right, good one. Good call.
Another five word for Abe, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, thanks.
But you're out, so it doesn't matter.
I had a six word title. I'll tell you guys after you guys do your six round title.
I don't know, yeah.
I got a six word.
Okay.
Do you?
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
That works. That is accurate. Alex, do you have a six-word title? He's thinking hard. I can hear the wheels spinning.
Yeah, I know. But this is like, I've got seven words.
I got so many fives all of a sudden, by the way.
I don't think I can. No, I don't have one now. Negative.
I got a seven.
What is it? What's your seven?
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs too.
That's your seven.
Yeah. I already had my six.
Oh man!
Did you have one? Did you have one, Alex, for six?
No.
No.
Well, I guess that means Aaron's the winner. My six was Home Alone, Lost in New York.
It's Home Alone 2, Lost in
New York. Oh, damn, that would be a seven then, all right. And because I was out, I was looking up some stuff. Harry Potter would have saved me in a lot of these.
Yeah.
Those are like giant movie titles.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, Aaron, you won this round of Escalator.
Great. I'm moving on up.
Yeah.
And the feeling is right. All right. That was games. Thanks, Abe.
You're welcome.
Smattering of applause. Thank you. let's move on to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week. First up, we have the Angry Birds movie.
No, it's not that good.
That's not a thing. Let's see. God's Not Dead 2.
With Melissa Joan Hart.
Yep. Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film ever made. I really want to see this movie.
Yeah, I heard that it was actually a very compelling documentary.
Alex, have you seen this?
No. I've heard it's the same thing as you guys. I've heard this is great, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's based off these kids that wanted to remake Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they started when they were really young, and they didn't finish. Yeah, shot for shot, and they didn't finish till like now, essentially.
Well, that's what I was also confused because I thought this came out already a couple years ago, but I think they released the actual like film they made a couple of years ago.
And I think
and then like now this is the documentary about them making the film. So I was like, wait, what's what?
I think
And what should I be watching?
I think the documentary is based around both filming that and then getting the funds to film like the last scene that they needed. I think that's what it's supposed to be.
Okay.
Because the last thing's like the big like the airplane fight with the big Nazi and everything and in the desert and the airplane spinning around like and they have explosions, so they needed like money to do that and they never were able to do that. That's what I'm guessing based off the trailer. But yeah, I know actually when you're a former co-worker, friend of the show, Ethan Anderton, Bradford, he saw both that the documentary and the whole film itself go. So
that's what I'm saying. That's what it would be. I guess they're different studios, but like that's the way to do it, is like see the doc and then see the actual feature they made.
Yeah, seeing the doc first specifically, I think that'd be the
what's
way
that one movie where they had two versions of it and then they had a combined version? It's fairly recent, like the Eleanor Rigby?
The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby?
Okay, yeah.
Did you see either of those?
That's a five-word one. That's not a family film, though. I saw the combined version, yeah.
Yeah, me too. That's all I saw.
Yeah, I got the Blu-ray to review. That's how I saw it, but I didn't watch them separate. Did I watch them? I did watch them separately. I watched him and her, yeah. Because one follows James McAvoy, the other follows Jessica Chastain. Yeah, I watched them both separately because I hear that's such a weird way to make a movie, especially for like a low budget like indie movie. It's like you have to get these actors to make a movie that they know is going to be like three different movies.
Well, obviously, you know, I always thought it was like a cool idea, but it just was never like it. First off, the story wasn't appealing enough, and then secondly, they never really marketed it the right way. Like, You couldn't actually go see all three of them together in theaters because no one would play any of them.
Yeah.
And that was always my thought. It was like, you should be able to go there and be able to choose, like, oh, I'll see this one. And then if you get out of it, you're like, oh, maybe I should see this one. But you couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Moving on. Let's see. Gotham Season 2 out this week on Blu-ray.
I haven't seen any of the series.
It's something.
But it's on Netflix.
Yeah. Hell on Wheels Season 5 is the final season of that show.
Railroad show?
That's the Old West show, based around like a railroad and cowboys and stuff. And Common was in it. I forget if he's still. I don't know if he stayed on
he's
it.
He's probably in it more than he is in Suicide Squad.
Yeah. let's see. Once Upon a Time Season 5. If you asked me at random what season I thought Once Upon a Time was, I wouldn't have said 5. But
that show is still on?
Yeah. Speaking of shows still on, South Park Season 19 arrived.
Yeah, but they're relevant. This week.
let's see, and on some special releases this week on Scream Factory, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
With Peter Weller.
Peter Weller, Jeff Goldblum, and John Lithgow, among others. That's on the Blu-ray this week. The Burbs, Joe Dante Classic.
Ooh, all right, yeah. Tom Hanks.
Yep. John Carpenter's Elvis, starring Kurt Russell, their first time working together. That's out on Shout Factory Select this week. Mm. And lastly, Session 9, out on Scream Factory release this week. This is a horror movie from like 2000.
Is that the one where you guys were saying that it's genuinely creepy?
Yes, like, it is. It's about these workers that go to like, I think, tear down or renovate like an old mental facility, and weird things happen. And it's very good. It's a really good movie. Really solid underrated horror movie. Not even it's more of a thriller, more of a psychological thriller than anything.
If it's anything like Michael Jackson's Thriller, then all right.
It's a lot like Michael Jackson's Thriller.
There's all right, then I'm in.
Went to the middle of it. It's amazing. All right, that's what's out now. Extremely cool. These movies that are now on Netflix that we can recommend or streaming in general. No Country for Old Men is now on Netflix streaming.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why you wouldn't have seen that movie, but it's fantastic, and you should. So there you go.
Also, Taika Waititi's Boy.
Yes, Boys. Yeah, that and Eagle vs. Shark. Both of his movies are on. I'm surprised, and I hope,
hey.
I hope What We Do in the Shadows eventually makes it on Netflix as well.
People should see that. That's underrated.
Yeah, and I will also add The Get Down. This is a new series from Baz Luhrmann that's now on Netflix. It features Shameik Moore, who starred in Dope last year.
He's also a professional dancer.
Yeah, and a singer. He's a lot of things. I interviewed him. I know.
Oh, cool. Where's the photo?
What?
Is there a photo?
No.
Oh,
but no, that it's The Get Down. It's centered in 1970s Brooklyn. For now, I've only Anna and I watched the first episode, which is it's 90 minutes long, directed by Baz Luhrmann. It certainly has a lot of this. It's about 70s Brooklyn, about the birth of hip hop. That's the basic conceit of the series. It has an ensemble cast featuring Shameik Moore, as I said, along with many others, including Jimmy Smits in a big role. I like seeing Jimmy Smits.
Smits.
Yeah, he plays like a political figure in the area at that time. I'd say it's very ambitious in what it's trying to do as far as its visual representation, which is that's very much Baz Luhrmann right there. If you think of, you know, Great Gatsby, Romeo and Juliet, Moulin Rouge, he's very kind of big with his visuals in it. Mm-hmm. As I said, we've only seen the first episode so far. It's six episodes right now. It's the first part of the first season. I don't know when the second half comes out, but regardless, if you're interested in The Get Down, that is now on Netflix as well. It's their latest original series.
Cool.
There you go. All right, that's extremely cool. Let's move on to next week's show. Next week, Abe and I will
be discussing
Kubo and the Two Strings, the latest film from Laika Animation, a studio that Abe and I very much like to champion every chance we get.
Yes. Yeah.
I will also mention that Ben-Hur does arrive in theaters next week as well.
So. Can't wait for that one either.
Are you having fun yet?
Yeah. I think you forgot the brother.
Brother!
Yeah, brother!
It has rock and roll as Toby Kebbell.
Yeah. So, yeah, Dr. Doom himself.
And it has
Danny Masterson?
John, no, the Houston, what's his name?
John Houston?
Jack Houston.
Oh, Jack
Houston, the actor from Birdwalk Empire, who you mainly like because of his gravelly voice and the fact that you can't see his face. Now they've taken away both of those things and made him a movie star, and Ben-Hur, so we'll see how that goes.
It's exactly what Hail Caesar predicted. Weren't that it weren't so simple.
And yeah, so next week, yeah, we talk about Kubo and the Two Strings for sure, but I can't imagine we won't speak of Ben-Hur in some way. Now, the last thing we do here, what should people go and see now, and what do you plan to see next? Alex Billington, I know you're a ways away, and movies aren't exactly the same as they are here, but what should people go and see in theaters right now?
Peace Dragon, of course.
Yeah. And what do you plan to see next?
Peace Dragon, of course. No, well, I mean, only because you guys talked about it, I'm seeing Kubo tomorrow, and I'm pretty damn excited about it.
Oh, you should be.
Yeah.
I'm jealous. Very jealous.
Wait, haven't you seen it?
No, I haven't. I don't get these first screenings. I'm a civilian, Alex.
Oh.
I've got to wait till Thursday, the earliest.
Ah.
Unless I hit up my good buddy... Zaki Hassan. Yeah. But I gotta wait till Thursday. So Abe, I'm very jealous.
Abe, what should go see now?
People should go see Peace Dragon. If not, then go see something that really deserves it, like either Ghostbusters, which again we talked about.
Officially a bomb by Sony.
I know, it's only made like half the money that its production cost, and that's just production alone. It's not marketing included, so bummer. But yeah, you know, go support it. It's not the casting that's the problem. So next is definitely Kubo and the Two Strings. Cannot wait. I might see it twice, 3D and flat.
It's worth seeing in 3D for sure, just to put that out there. Okay. I would say you have a double dose of forest movies you can catch up on. Pete's Dragon and Hunt for the Wilder People, if you can still find that movie.
Oh, cool.
Those are... did you see that one, Alex?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's...
is that Taika Waititi as well?
That's Taika Waititi, yes.
Right, yeah.
Trust in Taika, man.
Yeah. Thor turns out. Can't wait for Thor Ragnarok.
I really cannot either.
But yeah, those are... If you want to see movies about adventures in the wilderness, those are good ones to see. And the next movie, I think I'm seeing War Dogs this week. That's the next one on the docket, depending on what Ben-Hur is screening.
Are you actually going to see Ben-Hur?
Yeah, we want to see Ben-Hur. They got a tagline that says, "Are you having fun yet, brother?" That's fun.
Well, maybe they mentioned like the Hulk Hogan way.
I think director Timur Bekmambetov is so like wildly out there that I'm very curious what his
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunters Timur Bekmambetov.
Yeah, Wanted and Night Watches Timur Bekmambetov.
Because you're right. Every time I look at it, I'm like, how did he direct this? And then the only thought that comes to mind is that there was no way they could have gotten an actual like legitimate American director to remake this movie.
And you know, Morgan Freeman's so like, always good for a laugh, and he's wearing some dreads in this one, so that's a good that's a good way to go right there.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
And yeah, who doesn't want to see a good chariot race? Exactly, Anna. That's exactly what I was thinking. Done practically, apparently. They built like a whole track and everything. So.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of
giant
work.
Waste of money. Yeah. Like, why?
But yeah, that's so with all that in mind, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work at my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You can also find me writing daily over at screenrant.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You can find more of Aaron's work over at thecodeofzeke.com, and you can find me over at twitter.com/walrusmoose, #StrangerThings, #TeamLucas.
Alex Billington, where can people find more of your work online?
As always, at firstshowing.net and on Twitter at firstshowing.
Great. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe over on iTunes as well as on Audioboom.
Listen to our outdated episodes over at HHWLOD, Podomatic, and SoundCloud.
Feel free to email us any of your thoughts you might have had of anything we talked about this week over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
You can also interact with us and answer our questions, ask us questions over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or you can tweet us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
You can also find a way to send us plenty of Dragonheart and Pete's Dragon GIFs over at our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. And yeah, that's those are all the ways to reach us. Alex Billington, thank you for joining us this week.
Thanks, Alex.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me on. I love talking to you guys.
Yeah, fun to have you all the way across the Atlantic to be here to talk on our podcast with us.
Yes, I'm glad I actually could see this movie.
Or the Pacific if you go the other way.
No one goes that way. There's kaiju out there. No one crosses the Pacific anymore.
No one goes against that Pacific Rim.
So yeah, until next week when we just see how gently the guitar actually weeps for Kubo and the Two Strings. That's gonna be over this week's episode. So until next time, I made that work. I
did.
Minor hesitation, but I got it. I got it out.
Don't blink. You might miss it.
There you go. Until next time. So long.
And goodbye.
Starting the recording now. Don't start over. This is a good story. What are you saying?
No, it's not really a good story. It's just a like sad story. What's the one stupid comedy that Mike Judge made?
Extra
Butter?
No,
Extra. Yeah.
Which one? Idiocracy.
Before that, Idiocracy. So when it came out, I don't know if you guys remember this. It got like a butchered release.
Yeah.
And it was only in like 10 theaters.
Yeah.
And like I remember, this was before I was writing my site, but I remember like reading all these reviews that were like, "It's brilliant, you have to see it, but you'll never be able to." And so I had like made a trip to LA, and it was like showing in this one theater at the time, and I was like, "Oh my god, we have to go see it!" And we spent like $60 on a cab just to get out there because it was this like it was in the Dollar Theater, but it was in like the like far end of LA Dollar Theater. Mm-hmm. So we just like just to go see it, and then I remember seeing it being like, this is really dumb. Like, why did we spend this money just to go see Idiocracy? And then obviously it came out on DVD, you know, a year or two later, but it was still just like, oh my god, I've actually spent money to go do this. So I have done that. I have spent money to go see movies.
Thanks for that story.
No, No, I'm just saying that it's not as insane as you think. Or maybe I am insane, and I'm just telling you the truth.
I mean, you moved to Germany. I don't know.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Come on.
You emigrated. I don't know.